All right, so diving in today, we're tackling a case that's, well, it's kind of a big deal. Ackerberg v. Johnson. It's an Eighth Circuit decision from back in 88. And this thing really digs into some pretty key parts of securities law.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically, we're looking at when you can actually sell stock that isn't registered legally, of course. It all comes down to these exemptions, right?
Right.
And then we've got this whole other question of whether these investor disputes can actually end up in arbitration. So yeah, if you're trying to like really wrap your head around the Securities Act of 1933, you kind of need to know this
You
case.
really do.
And we've got some great stuff to work with today. We've got the full case brief, a standard legal brief, and even some guidance on how to break all this down. So
Right.
we're not just going to tell you what happened. We're going to like figure out why it mattered.
Exactly. And Ackerberg v. Johnson really hits on some core concepts
Yeah.
in securities regulation. So spending some time getting to know it is time well spent.
For sure.
It's fascinating how the court took these big legal ideas and applied them to a real situation, a real case.
Okay, so paint me a picture. It's 1984. We've got Norman Ackerberg. He decides to invest a good chunk of change, $99,000, into this company, Vertimag Systems Corporation.
Okay.
And the shares, 16,500 of them, they're unregistered.
Unregistered, all
And
right.
the guy selling them, none other than Clark Johnson, founder, chairman, the whole shebang of Vertimag. Now, Johnson had these shares for at least 4 years, claiming he bought them as, just a regular investment. But there's a twist. Brokerage firm, PJH, they're in the mix, helping facilitate the sale.
See, now that's interesting. And there's a piece here that's really important. Ackerberg signed a subscription agreement.
Ah, okay.
This wasn't just a handshake deal. It was clearly spelled out that these shares, they weren't registered, which means they weren't just freely tradable,
Yeah, right.
And the agreement also said that Ackerberg was a sophisticated investor, meaning he understood the risks
Brought
involved
it.
and that he had access to information about the company, specifically a private placement memorandum. So this whole thing about the buyer being a sophisticated investor, that's something the court really focused on.
And that's something we'll definitely want to dig into a bit later. Okay, so some time passes, and then bam, lawsuit. Ackerberg claims Johnson violated Section 12(1) of the 1933 Act by selling him these unregistered securities.
Makes sense.
Which brings us to the two big questions the Eighth Circuit had to grapple with. First, was Johnson even required to register these shares? Did he qualify for an exemption?
Right.
And second, could all this be settled in arbitration instead of a full-blown court case?
Interesting. So what happened at the lower court level?
Well, the lower court sided with Ackerberg on the first part, the exemption, saying Johnson wasn't exempt,
Okay.
but then they ruled against him on the second point, saying these claims couldn't be forced into arbitration. So you've got this split decision, which is why the Eighth Circuit steps in. They had to take a closer look at these two really fundamental issues.
It shows how tricky these things can be, even early on in a case.
Okay, so let's break down that first big question, the exemption. It all hinges on Section 4A1 of the 1933 Act. What's the deal with this exemption? What kind of transactions is it supposed to cover?
Well, the main idea is Section 4A1 lets some people off the hook when it comes to registering their stock sales. It's for people who aren't the original issuer of the stock and not underwriters or dealers.
Okay, so not the company itself, not the people helping the company sell stock, and not the folks who buy and sell stock professionally. So who's left? Just regular investors selling their own shares.
Exactly. Think of it as like carving out a space for your everyday investor who wants to sell some stock they own. They don't need to go through all the regulations the companies going public have to deal with.
Right. So it seems pretty straightforward, but then you mentioned this term underwriter, and that seems to be where things get a little, well, complicated.
Yeah, underwriter is the key here. And it doesn't mean the same thing as in, say, insurance.
Good point. So how does the law actually define an underwriter in this context?
So in securities law, an underwriter is defined in Section 2A11 of the 1933 Act. And it's a broader definition. It includes anyone involved in distributing securities for the issuer, the company.
Okay, so basically anyone helping a company get its stock out to the public.
Right. It's about preventing companies from getting around registration by using other people to sell unregistered stock.
That makes sense. So in this case, the Eighth Circuit actually overturned the lower court's decision on this exemption. They said Johnson was exempt.
Yep.
What led them to that conclusion?
Well, a few things really swayed them. First, they looked at how long Johnson had held on to the shares.
Okay, so the 4 years we talked about earlier.
Exactly. He had them for over 4 years, And while there's no magic number written in the law, courts often use this two-year rule of thumb.
Two-year rule of thumb. So if you hold on to shares for at least 2 years, it shows you weren't just trying to flip them quickly.
That's the idea. It suggests you bought them as a real investment. And the Eighth Circuit saw Johnson's 4 years double that benchmark as really strong evidence.
So time played a big role in their decision. What else did they consider?
The other big thing was Ackerberg's sophistication as an investor. Remember that subscription agreement? It specifically said he was a sophisticated investor, meaning he knew what he was getting into and that he had access to all sorts of information about Vertimag.
Ah, so he wasn't just some random guy off the street buying stock without knowing the risks.
Exactly. The court figured someone like Ackerberg, with his financial background, didn't need the same level of protection as someone less experienced.
That's a really interesting point. It's like saying if you're a pro, you don't need the same handholding as a rookie. But, you know, even pros can make mistakes, right?
Right. But the court focused on those objective factors. They saw the holding period, the sophistication of the buyer, as signs that this deal didn't need to go through the whole registration process.
Got it. So they were looking at the facts of the situation rather than just Johnson's intentions.
Exactly.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk about the other big issue in this case, arbitration. So this is about where these legal fights should happen. Could Ackerberg's claims be handled through arbitration, a private process, instead of going through the public court system?
Right.
And what was the general thinking on this before Ackerberg?
Well, before 1989, the main idea, based on a Supreme Court case called Wilco v. Swan, was that you couldn't force these 1933 Act claims into arbitration. The courts back then felt really strongly that the whole point of the Securities Act, protecting investors, making things transparent, needed to happen in a public court.
So they were worried about fairness and public accountability?
Exactly.
But then things changed, right? You mentioned a Supreme Court case from 1989 that really shook things up.
Yeah, that was Rodriguez de Quijas v. Shearson American Express, Inc. And it was a game changer.
A game changer how?
It overturned Wilco. Straight up overruled it. And it said there's this strong federal policy in favor of arbitration, even for securities claims.
So after Rodriguez, arbitration became a much more likely outcome for these types of disputes.
Exactly.
Okay, so back to Ackerberg. How did the Eighth Circuit rule on arbitration, especially since that Rodriguez decision came out while Ackerberg was still being appealed?
Well, the Eighth Circuit, following the Supreme Court's lead, also reversed the lower court on this one. They said the defendants, Johnson and PJH, hadn't given up their right to arbitration just because they waited until after Rodriguez came out.
So the timing of the Supreme Court decision actually worked in their favor.
In a way, yeah. The court basically said, look, before Rodriguez, no one really knew if these claims could even go to arbitration. It would have been pointless to try.
That's a pretty big deal. It shows how a single Supreme Court decision can completely change the course of a case and even the legal landscape as a whole.
Absolutely. It's a great example of why it's so important to keep up with what's happening in the courts, especially for lawyers.
For sure. Okay. The case brief also mentions damages. How did the district court calculate those?
They used something called rescission. Basically, they wanted to put Ackerberg back in the same financial position he was in before he bought the stock.
Like hitting the undo button on the whole deal?
Exactly. They looked at the difference between what Ackerberg paid per share and what the shares were actually worth at the time of the sale.
So they were trying to make him whole again.
Right. But the Eighth Circuit didn't really dig into the details of the damages. They were more focused on the big picture legal questions, like the exemption and arbitration.
Makes sense. So as we wrap this up, what are the big takeaways from Ackerberg v. Johnson? What are the key lessons here?
I'd say there are three big ones.
All right, lay them on me.
First, if you're selling unregistered stock, you're going to be able to prove you qualify for that exemption under Section 4A1. It's not enough to just say you're not an underwriter or a dealer.
So you need to show with hard evidence that you meet the requirements.
Right. You have to prove that you are holding the shares as an investment. And a long holding period, like we talked about, is a good way to do that.
Okay, so that two-year rule of thumb is definitely something to keep in mind.
Definitely.
What's the second takeaway?
The second big one is that arbitration is pretty much the standard now for securities disputes.
So even though things were different before, that Rodriguez case really changed the game.
It did.
Okay, and the third?
The third lesson is that you got to stay up to date on how the courts are interpreting securities law, especially the Supreme Court.
Because a single decision can have a huge ripple effect.
Exactly. like we saw with arbitration in Ackerberg.
All right, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Ackerberg v. Johnson is a dense case, but it really highlights some important nuances in securities law.
It does.
Especially when it comes to those exemptions for unregistered stock sales and whether or not you can push these disputes into arbitration. But there's one more thing I want to bring up. The court put a lot of weight on the idea of buyer sophistication, right?
Right.
So think about it this way. We're in a world where financial information is everywhere, and anyone can trade stocks online. What does sophistication even mean anymore?
That's a really good question.
Is it just about having access to information? Or does it mean something more, like actually understanding how to analyze that information and make smart decisions?
It's something to think about as securities law continues to evolve.
For sure. This whole case is a great reminder that the law is a living thing. It's constantly adapting to the times. Anyway, this has been a really insightful look at Ackerberg v. Johnson. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.